You are listening to Your World Today on Radio Islam International. Revealed how Israel offered to sell South African nuclear weapons. We're joined on the line by Dr. John Large, independent nuclear consultant, live out of the United Kingdom. Dr. John, good day to you and welcome to the program.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Thank you for joining us. Israel offered to sell nuclear weapons to the South African apartheid regime. Is this any surprise or secret?
Well, it's not a secret now, and it's certainly not a surprise. It was known that in the mid-70s that Israel was looking to expand and increase its reliability of its nuclear weapons. And the point was, it wasn't simply that Israel was prepared to sell South Africa technology. What it was prepared to do was swap the information that it held on nuclear weapons development, which it acquired from a number of international sources, including the French. You know, so you really dabble in internationalism here when you talk about these nuclear weapon procurement. But what the Israelis were prepared to do was to swap the technology, the know-how with South Africa, for an essential ingredient, South African uranium, in the form of yellow cake. Because Israel needed the yellow cake to make the enriched uranium that it required and the plutonium required for its nuclear weapons. Without that essential ingredient, it could do. And for example, around that time, as the weapons program developed, this went on right up until the 80s, the Israelis swapped to South Africa 3 grams of tritium, which is a radioactive element that's used to boost the nuclear weapon. They gave South Africa, so it's believed, about 3 grams, tiny amount, of tritium for 30 or so, or 300 tons of uranium. So you can see that's the sort of deals that were going on.
Yes, so that was, you know, what was going on. Does this point towards the fact that they have nuclear weapons, something that they still dismiss today?
Well, they have a policy of neither confirming nor denying, but I think it's established that Israel certainly has a nuclear weapons arsenal. We know it's not a member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the International Atomic Energy Agency Treaty, so it ducks out of any international responsibilities. And, of course, it holds the situation in the Middle East. Way back in the 70s and 80s, what Israel was looking to do was not only establish a dependency, if you like, a reliable source of uranium, but also it wanted to expand its weapons. It needed other areas where to actually put its weapons down. So it wanted to expand out of Israel and have depots or facilities outside Israel, outside the immediate area of the Middle East. But this would give them an extra element of security. So what was going on, probably, between Israel and South Africa was almost like a situation where you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, but in part of that scratching was the fact they would establish a weapons base, possibly in South Africa.
These were important developments at the time, and if we look, you know, deeper into this, the documents were uncovered by an American academic, Shasha Polakow Suransky. Is he still alive? Has he been targeted for assassination?
I don't know, and I dare for me to venture into that area of assassinations and the dark arts. I think this is history, and it's here we have an academic commenting on history, filling in lots of the details that were not previously known. And you know, this is what happens when you do studious research. You can find out those intriguing little details, fill in the blanks, if you like, and that's what's happening at this particular stage. But remember, I mean, South Africa was in an odd position. It was the major in the time of apartheid, that awful period, it was the major technological nation of Africa. Yet it was denied any representation because of the sanctions and the embargoes. It was denied any representation. For example, the International Atomic Energy Agency, that's the international body that's interested in nuclear power and nuclear weapons, its representative was Egypt. So the African representative to the IAEA was Egypt, where really it was Africa, South Africa, that was developing all the nuclear technology on the continent. After all, you know, and that's carrying on now. It is South Africa in the post-apartheid days, which is still a nuclear power in as much as it's got the Coburg nuclear reactors, still got a big research institute in the Sahara, it's a Safari system. And of course, it's about now to embark upon a new program of civil nuclear reactors. There's a supply, a nuclear equipment supply conference in South Africa, starts in December, on December 1st and 2nd. So you can see South Africa has become active again in the nuclear field, ostensibly and hopefully in the civil nuclear field, and not as it was in the past, in the military nuclear field.
While you have outlined that it's almost now undeniable that Israel does have nuclear weapons, but how come Israel and Netanyahu are always on about Iran's nuclear weapons when they have a huge arsenal themselves?
Well, they have a limited arsenal, but they have a very effective... You have to put together nuclear arsenal, and there's two components. One is the actual weapons itself, the nuclear bombs, and the other one is the delivery systems. And the series of checks and cross-checks to stop a country developing, if you fail to stop it developing on the nuclear weapons front, you can try and stop it on the ballistic missile front and other means of delivery. So what Israel is doing at the moment with its friends in the West, etc., is to try and bar Iran's development of ballistic missiles, missile delivery systems as well. And what you do is you look at a country and you say, how long before that country now, like Iran, cannot produce nuclear weapons on its own, how long before it gets to a position where it can break out and start a positive program of nuclear weapons, nuclear delivery systems development to actually produce a viable arsenal? Of course, what's been happening in the last 6 months, over the last 13 years, but the last 6 months when agreement has finally been reached, a bit of a patchwork quilt of an agreement that's been reached with Iran, is that the West have recognized effectively that Iran requires about 2 years to actually move from its present condition into a fully nuclear arsenal equipped state. And that's really what's going on. And of course, Israel is viable, and Israel will be looking for participants and allies around the area, even stretching out as far as into Africa, to actually support its particular position.
Now, when we look at this particular issue from different angles, why is there no UN action to tackle Israel's nuclear arsenal? Why isn't America trying to take their weapons of mass destruction as they went to Iraq, went to war with Iraq because of that?
Well, it's a question of political bureaucracy. I mean, simply, the framework, the treaty framework, is via the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, which is the policeman of the nuclear world, responsible for both civil and military nuclear endeavors. The fact is that Israel simply is not a signatory of the International Atomic Energy Agency. It doesn't belong to that club. So however much noise those club members make, it cannot sanction Israel because it's not a member. So therefore Israel decides not to join the International Atomic Energy Agency treaties and the Non-Proliferation Treaty in particular. So it means no one can take sanctions. There are one or two other countries as well. India, for example, is not a member. I believe Pakistan is also exempt.
Are we moving closer to a global nuclear war, or is that all for the conspiracy theorists?
What we're doing is we're moving away from one particular brinkmanship to another type of brinkmanship. The so-called Cold War and the nuclear standoff that occurred between the nuclear nations, such as primarily Russia and America, United States, and there are other junior players like Britain and France, etc., but the main players are Russia and America. That standoff, that sort of nuclear deterrent standoff, is changing. And now we're looking into, instead of intercontinental confrontations, we're beginning to move into a period, I think we've moved into it now, where you're talking about regional standoffs. And this brings you down a whole range of not only weapons, from these big super weapons, megaton weapons, down to kiloton weapons, relatively small weapons, and to different types of delivery systems. So instead of great big sort of missile, intercontinental missiles like Trident, firing clusters of rockets, each containing 12 or so nuclear weapons, separate nuclear weapons, from submarines in mid-ocean, in the deep. Now we're talking about perhaps cruise missiles being used, relatively simple cruise missiles carrying nuclear weapons being fired from land vehicles or land silos, or indeed all smaller submarines. So the whole confrontation and standoff situation may well be changing in our lifetime.
It's really intriguing how things are developing. Dr. John, it was fascinating chatting to you. We really appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Have a lovely afternoon. Bye. That was Dr. John Large. We finally had him on, and he shared with us interesting information on how warfare is developing and the direction it is going in.